Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Welcome to Onceable, episode 97. I'm Brittany, and tonight I'm joined by Karen, Kristen, and Laura. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hi.
Fun fact, this is my fourth podcast with Karen this weekend, and my third with Kristen. So it's a good time. We've been talking
fact,
a lot.
This is my sixth podcast of the weekend.
Oh my God.
I'm so ready to be done, guys.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's been Karen's been playing catch up this weekend, and she's recorded a lot, and they were not short. I feel so bad. The two that I was on with her were like 2 hours long each, and then another one was an hour before Once Upon a Time, and now here we are.
And I've just been like hiking up mountains. I haven't been like podcasting so much as I've just been like hiking.
Honestly,
okay.
I think it's an equal amount of struggle.
Equal trade-off.
Feels like it.
So we're here today to talk about Season 6, Episode 4, Strange Case. And if you want to talk about the episode with us, you can get in touch with us at Onceable on Twitter. Or you can comment on this post on Hypeable.com or any of the Once Upon a Time posts. I like that a lot of people write their theories for what's going on this season there, and I try to respond to most of the comments there, so that's a good time. Talk to me there. Let's go with thumbs up, thumbs down for this week, and I'll start with Karen, since you haven't been here for a while.
Yeah, I'm glad to be back, honestly. It was kind of weird taking a couple of weeks off, because usually I'm pretty steady when it comes to Once Upon a Time. Sundays are pretty easy for me, but glad to be back. Really enjoyed the last couple of episodes. They weren't spectacular, but they were solid. And I'm going to have to go with the same for this one. I'm going to say thumbs up. Didn't totally love it. Got really angry at Rumple like a dozen times. But other than that, I think the story is progressing in a way that I enjoy. And some of the communication between characters that's going on right now, I do enjoy a bit. So I'm going to give it a thumbs up.
Interesting. Let's go with Kristen next.
I mean, part of me wants to give it anything but a thumbs up just because Hyde is gone. But the episode itself was actually really good, and it pushed some things forward. So I'm going to give it a thumbs up too, but it hurts my heart.
And Laura?
I'm also on a thumbs up. It wasn't wildly groundbreaking episode, but it was good. It moved the plot, brought up some interesting factoids. I didn't see the whole Hyde dying kind of thing, and like thumbs up for Robert Carlyle's new hair. So I'm good. Yeah.
Laura's really into Robert Carlyle's hair, guys.
I really am. I may have been vaguely distracted. Or lack thereof. But I'm sorry. It is. Please, people, you need to agree with me because they don't. I think he's so much sexier with the short hair. In fact, I'm not really sure what happened in that first scene because I was too busy gawking at Robert Carlyle, to be honest. So I don't know. I just think he's pretty sexy for a 55-year-old guy. That's all I'm saying.
Hey, you do you, girl. I am going to give it a thumb sideways. I've decided as of last week, I'm no longer taking into consideration Rumple's storyline when it comes to ranking episodes because it's always going to bring it down and that's unfair to the show. I'm ignoring that, but my anger echoes Kristen's with Hyde being gone. I am just not happy about it, and I was really willing to come in here and give this a thumbs down. I really want to unpack that story because it's driving me crazy that they took him away and they took Jekyll away this early. I don't know where this season is going, and it's making me a little crazy. But let's talk about favorite quotes really quickly. Karen, what was yours?
Mine was the part where David is making Emma breakfast, and he's making a lot of pancakes, and she just says, but I'm a savior, not a Romanian powerlifter. It just hit me the right way, and I thought it was the funniest line of the episode.
I'm pretty sure that David thinks his pancakes are going to fix everything, because he talked about it like 4 times in this episode, and it just made me smile.
Also, Neil is so cute.
Yes.
So cute. Oh, my goodness. Kristen, what was yours?
Mine came from Belle, and it's more funny just in the I'm glad she said it more than like it actually being funny. But it was when she was talking to Rumpel. Yeah. And she goes, what did you do to him? Of course you won't tell me. You know what? I don't care. And it just it's only funny because we really just are tired of this Rumpel crap. And clearly she is, too. Like, she's starting to just kind of get over it. And it's like, I know you're not going to tell me. I'm done caring about it.
Yeah, I'm so happy she's fed up. It makes me filled with so much joy. And Laura, what was your favorite quote?
Mine was just I love grumpy Leroy. I was like, unless you need a back rub or a foot massage, let me get back to what dwarves do best, guarding the kingdom. And then he promptly gets knocked out. Here's the thing. It just was so funny because I thought, since when do you guys like guard the kingdom? Like right after he said it, I was like, really? The next second he's unconscious and I'm like, yep, that's about what I would remember. So yeah, I kind of thought it was funny on that level.
Yeah. He does a great job guarding the kingdom. Have you seen him yell and warn everyone that there's a big ominous black cloud coming?
Yeah,
he does his job.
I mean, normally he just gets kind of pissed off. You know, I was just like, you don't guard anything. So yeah, I thought it was just sort of ironically funny.
I do love him. I'm glad he's been in a few more scenes this season than he has in a couple past seasons. My favorite quote was from Regina, and it is about Belle. It's when she finds out that Jolly Roger has a protection spell on it and she can't leave. And she makes this comment that's kind of under her breath. And then she says, it's always out of one prison and into another with her. And it's so true. Belle is always locked up and tucked away somewhere where no one can get to her. And it's incredibly frustrating for Belle and me.
If you hadn't picked that, I was going to, because it's so, so true. As soon as she said it, I was like, at least someone gets it.
Yeah, I'm glad everyone else is really seeing it, too. And it's not like, you should give him a chance. No, everyone's over it. I have an overall question before we start to unpack this episode, because it's something that's kind of bugging me, and I think it might only be bugging me, but it is something we also touched upon every episode of Onceable, I think, so far. If you had to pick something right now at the close of this episode, what would you say the biggest threat of this season is? Like, what is the driving force of this season? Because I feel like it's very fragmented at this point, and I'm having a hard time nailing it down. Maybe it's just not there yet, but I kind of just want to see where you guys are landing.
I feel like, well, you're right, it is very fragmented, but I feel like the one that probably holds the most weight is this Emma going to die or not die, and what, you know, what does that mean kind of thing. I mean, there are other, I mean, I can think of two others, but that's what I would say is probably the primary one. But that being said, very much like last season where we're like, oh, they're meandering through the underworld with no big direction. You know, it was like, ho-hum, here another day in the underworld. With this season, it's like, oh, well, we have the Emma maybe going to die plot line, but it's not as intense as it could be. And then we have the, what is Regina going to do about the evil queen thing? And it's not really as intense. And then there was the whole Hyde thing, which is now kind of solved, but that impacts the Regina thing. And then there's the whole Belle Rumpel thing, which will eventually lead to them being co-parents, I suppose, if the Belle pregnancy ever like comes to fruition. I keep laughing because pregnant Belle, I feel like it's like Dorothy's braids in The Wizard of Oz. Sometimes Dorothy's braids are long, sometimes they're short. Sometimes Belle's very pregnant, sometimes she's not very looking pregnant at all. Like, I was like, can we just get the belly the right size and figure out what we're doing with that? But anyway, yeah, I think there's like a lot of threats, but they're not really, they haven't like picked one to really hone in on.
Prior to tonight's episode, I would have said Hyde. He was the driving force of all of the crazy. Like, despite the evil queen being present, I really thought he was the big bad. So to see him brought down so easily, it honestly kind of pisses me off, because he was so good at the dramatics and I just believed him and wanted to see more. So I'm a little heartbroken that he's gone already. By the end of this episode, I think that the evil queen and the Regina possibly having to die in order to defeat her is going to be the biggest threat to all of them this season, because they're not going to want to hurt Regina, who's doing her best, you know, and is her best self. And yet it seems that in order to take out the evil queen, they may have to kill Regina. And so I think that's somehow going to end up tying into this whole Emma storyline. But right now, I think that's, you know, separately on its own, is now the reigning biggest threat.
I think I agree with Kristen. I really would have pegged Hyde to be the big bad, and poof. But aside from that, I have to say the hooded figure in Emma's visions seems like a bigger threat right now. I think because they're still sort of looming and we don't necessarily know when they're going to come in, and that also seems like a finale kind of thing, whereas I feel like Regina's or the evil queen is going to be at the forefront of the season, and yet they're going to solve that maybe a little bit earlier. So I think she's always going to feel more in your face, but I think the stuff that's sort of in the darkness, in the background, and shadows is actually going to be the bigger threat.
Yeah, I am falling in that camp now, but I do agree. I thought this was the week where we were finally going to like open this untold story of Jekyll and Hyde and get the real reason why Hyde wanted to come to Storybrooke and see all these stories play out. We're getting a lot of nods to this like notion that they want someone and wants these untold stories to play out, and it's all like, you'll see why. And there's a lot of you'll see, but no movement by anyone. And I'm getting just like the evil queen right now doesn't feel like a threat. It feels like she's just having fun. And we like watching the evil queen. So I think that in my mind is she's like there to entertain me, but not be a threat to anyone that I like on the show. Like she's sort of just like a jester, like, you know, coming in and doing a little dance. And then she goes away and you kind of forget about her. And then when the story gets stale, she sort of like makes her way in and makes a deal and then goes away again. So it is early. This was only episode 4, and we are getting more of the savior mythology coming up because of Aladdin. We know that he has something to do with the savior, I think he is a savior. So we'll cross that whole hooded figure thing when we get there. If there are two saviors alive now, what does that mean? And hopefully we'll get more information, but I'm just getting a little tired of being like, oh, well, next week's the week I'm going to find out what we're talking about and dealing with this season, and then they kill Hyde. And then I'm like, all right, well, we're not going to find out yet. So anyway, we did get a bunch of Jekyll and Hyde's backstory this week, and we flashbacked to when Jekyll was developing this serum, and he was on the verge of a breakthrough but needed membership to this science academy organization. I think he would just be able to have all the full resources available to him and help, but his tactics were a little extreme and violent in their nature, because his goal was to separate basically the feelings part of you from the mental part of you, and no one really wanted to give him funding for that, including Dr. Lydgate from Once Upon a Time in Wonderland, who was the doctor who treated Alice for her craziness.
Oh,
I forgot about that.
Yeah, I knew he looked familiar, but I could not place him, so thank you for that.
Yeah, I knew he was coming back just because I read all the casting news, so when he popped up, I was like, oh, this is where they're putting him. And an interesting thing that I thought about, knowing who he was and watching him throughout the episode and then seeing that he lost his daughter, maybe that made him treat people with lost children and take in all these mentally crippled patients and treat them because, you know, he just couldn't deal with loss anymore. So maybe that sparked his career. Maybe Mary was actually alive while he was doing all that crazy stuff to Alice. But who knows? We don't talk about Once Upon a Time in Wonderland. It never existed.
Right. Retcon. Yeah. Retcon.
Don't talk about it. Rumple shows up and he's, you know, once again trying to make a deal. And this was the most frustrating part of this story for me, was finding out that this whole backstory was a way for Rumple to have, like, one line to Belle to be like, oh, you know, I just went to him so I can kill the feelings inside of me that I was feeling for you. I was like, that is so romantic. You just, you sparked some joy in his life, and he, his first instinct was to kill it.
That was Rumple. I don't like giving Rumple very much credit, but I think he, at least now he's accepted his love for Belle, and he's trying to work it back into his life, whatever means necessary. But back then, like, that made sense. That was more of the Rumple that he was then than he is now, at least.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And she does have that great line where she's just like, yeah, you're saying that you're this man now, but I'll never forget the man you were. And I'm like, Belle is, like, on my good list, finally.
Yes.
It's taken so much to get her there.
I just wanted her to get angrier and angrier and then just, like, punch him in the face.
Yeah, or, like, rip the dagger out of his possession.
Yeah.
I forgot, actually. That's another thing that I forgot about, like, that the dagger's a thing that's in play still. Like, I just, for some reason,
yeah,
like,
me the, too.
Like all the Dark One changings, I was like, oh, right, there's this thing.
Yeah, like, literally, I was like, oh, wait, whose name's on that now? Now, I was, like, so confused. Like, literally, I'm still not sure I understand. I was like, okay, so the name Rumpelstiltskin is on the dagger, but then the dagger ended up, so Rumple then had his own dagger stabbed Hyde with it. Hyde pulled it out of his chest, and did that mean that then Hyde was controlling Rumple? Like, I was very confused.
Yeah, so,
I was super-de-duper confused.
Yeah, so Rumple was in control of himself because he had the dagger, and then when he stabbed Hyde and Hyde didn't die, Hyde pulled the dagger out, so therefore he had the dagger and was in control of Rumple, just like we've seen before with other people having control of the dagger.
I did love watching the look on Rumple's face unfold as Hyde just pulls it out of himself and he's like, nope, you didn't kill me yet. Like, it was amazing just for that.
Yeah, and he's such a good villain because he has that smoothness where he's calculating everyone's steps and he's not causing an unnecessary mess where there doesn't need to be one. He's just very, like, oh, I mean, a literal mess, yes, because he did smash the lab to pieces. But, you know, he's not killing anyone unnecessarily. He's just going about his business. He's doing what he needs to get done. He did leave with a big question mark of what was your big plan here, and if you died before he could do it. But we did see that his counterpart in the flashbacks, when Hyde came out, he got his name because he was coming out of hiding. Rumple's clever and gave him that name. And so when he comes out of hiding and he's talking with Mary, this woman that Jekyll's infatuated with, he's acting on finally all the emotional, he's only acting on emotional impulses and drives. He's not really thinking too much because that is the Jekyll part. And so him and Mary get it on, and then she wakes up with another guy in her bed, and he's like, no, I'm him, I'm not crazy. And then he accidentally kills her in this very dramatic, slow motion, unnecessary fall through the window. So I just wanted to know what you guys thought of that whole backstory. I felt it was a little brief. I thought there was going to be a lot more of them in the Land of Untold Stories, because that's a place that I personally want to go and see what it was like. But what did you guys think of their take on the Jekyll and Hyde bit?
Well, I was going to say, I don't know if it's because I'm, like, unreasonably attracted to Hyde for some reason. I felt really sympathetic toward him in the backstory. And I think it's because he hadn't really gotten to, like, the super evil part yet, although clearly that didn't deter me too much later on. I really liked his chemistry with Mary, and I was really surprised that I found myself rooting for him instead of Jekyll. And that was even before Jekyll threw her out the window. So I think they did a really good job, like they usually do, in showing where the villains are coming from and what they've gone through and their reasoning for certain things. And I just think, in general, like, Hyde is just, he was a great character both in the past and the present, and I really appreciated that they kept surprising me with the things that were happening around his story, because, like we've said before, that doesn't always happen in Once Upon a Time. Things are pretty much laid out for you, but Hyde has consistently been a character that has shocked me, and I think that's another reason why I just really liked him.
Yeah, I liked how they kind of, just a little bit, turned it on its head that Hyde was not the embodiment of evil. He was the embodiment of, like, passion and emotion and was unrestrained. And so that's why, mm-hmm. that's why Jekyll was actually the villain and Hyde is not necessarily, like, Jekyll was more capable of the, you know, emotionless throwing out the window, and Hyde wasn't. Like, I liked how they turned all of that on its head a little bit. I also wish and hope that maybe we'll see them in the Land of Untold Stories at some point, because they were pretty pivotal in a lot of these people's stories, like, because of how we met them and where they were, and I'm sure that they played a bigger role. So maybe we haven't seen the last of Hyde. It won't progress his story any. It would be in flashbacks, right. But I do want to know what happened in the Land of Untold Stories.
Yeah, I also sort of liked the part where it was the, you know, went to bed with Hyde and woke up with Jekyll, and that whole, like, how, you know, that sort of moral ambiguity, and then the girl goes out the window. I was like, that was a fascinating story. I was like, oh, that's, like, not what I thought was coming there at all. So I kind of liked that whole storyline took me by total surprise, because I didn't see that coming at all.
Yeah, I really liked how they played on them each blaming the other for taking away the love of their life. And you kind of forget that they're the same person. And so they were both in love with the same person. And for different reasons, they blame each other for, you know, ruining their future happiness. And I thought that was really the most interesting part of their story, was the fact that, you know, he could say, oh, you acted irrationally and you ruined my future happiness. Or, like, oh, you weren't aggressive enough and you couldn't get the girl, so did I have to suffer? And, you know, it was a very, very cool to see. And then, you know, Hyde sort of, because he is the emotional, he comes undone and he's upset and he's angry and he's feeling everything so, like, amplified in that moment. And yeah, but I do agree. I hope that they come back in flashbacks so we can see a little bit of the inner workings of the Land of Untold Stories and get to know what their role was, because, you know, he was the warden. He terrified a lot of people, and a lot of people know him. So they've had run-ins with him over time, and it would just be interesting to see what his life was like there. The only thing I didn't like that they did was they gave Rumple all of the agency in, like, the story. So, like, Jekyll actually never did anything. He got to the brink of something, and then Rumple clicked his finger, like, snapped his fingers, and poof, oh, your serum works.
Well, and speaking of, like, agency and things like that, too, I'm like, since when is the girl Belle the one who, like, runs around and goes, eek, eek, help, help? Now, granted, she stabbed him with a shell. I was, like, waiting for him to have a shellfish allergy or something and keel over, but, I mean, for me, I was like, I really, you know, and I think it also goes back to the amazing pregnant, unpregnant Belle, like the whole, I mean, I did like seeing Captain Hook in action. I mean, I think it's nice to actually watch him do a little swashbuckling, considering he doesn't get to do that very often. I was just like, come on, Belle, you can do better than stand there and shriek against the ropes. Like, surely you could run around in circles a little more. Like, I don't know. I had some problem with Belle being a little too eek, eek, and passive in that scene.
Yeah, she's definitely proven herself to be much braver. Like, we saw her with Anna. Like, there's a lot of backstory that we've been privy to that paints a very different Belle. Yeah. I think that the forefront of her mind right now is, oh my God, like, she's thinking of her child more so, I think, in this moment, as opposed to, like, I can, like, pick up a sword and kill someone. So I don't know where her head is at right now, and she's trying to figure out, she doesn't understand what's going on with Rumple outside, and she knows that he can stop things, and there's just a lot going on. But I was also very happy to see Hook in action, and the shell phone thing, oh my gosh, where did they come up with that? It's like, all of a sudden Hook's like, I also have this seashell necklace. You can page me on it if you need to get in touch with me.
Oh my God. Right. Like, I was waiting for, like, Ursula to come up, like, or something like a Little Mermaid connection to come with that. Like, I was like, seriously, what is up with that?
Oh, it's so great. I loved it. It's like a conch phone. So great. Reminded me of SpongeBob a lot, if anyone's seen that episode where they call the magic conch.
I didn't put together the shell phone thing until just now, and so that's amazing, and yeah. Like, I understood it in the episode, but I don't think I put it together until just now, so now I'm really amused.
I think I just watched too much SpongeBob, to be honest. I mean, their backstory wasn't that involved and detailed. It was pretty quick over with. We learned a huge, huge thing about split personalities in physically split personalities in this episode, and that is, have to kill the original person in order for the thing you set to die, I guess. I don't know how, even know how to, like, you have to kill the host in order to, like get the parasite to die. So basically what it boils down to is that Regina has to die in order to kill the evil queen. And there was a line that she had when she goes to talk to Emma about this, because Emma, if you guys recall, like, she brings this up in the conversation, asked Regina to hold on to the dagger when they were in Camelot and said, like, I know you'll be the one to do whatever's necessary should it come to that. And she's basically saying the same thing to Emma in this moment. Like, if the evil queen is, like, holding the whole town hostage and is going to kill everyone, I know that you'll kill me in order to stop that from happening. The thing that bugged me a little bit in this conversation was that Regina opens the conversation with the line, I have to die. And I don't think she does.
I giggled, like, as she said it. It was so abrupt. It was like, okay, a little overdramatic there, but sure.
And, like, I think we have some options to explore. Like, the fact that maybe you could live with the evil queen, like you've been doing for how many years?
Mm-hmm.
Right, like,
that's find my thought.
Like, can it go back to how it was?
Yeah, or imprison her. I mean, she'll get out.
It's not, like, the obvious, like, some sort of connection spell, and then Regina decides of how, you know, she learns balance, and, like, I mean, surely that must be where this is going at some point.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to jump and kill Regina, just as I don't think they're going to jump and kill Emma in this season at all, but, you know, Once Upon a Time likes to shock, so who knows. But yeah, I just thought that was such a dramatic leap for her to be like, yeah, well, I there's no other choice. I have to die. And, you know, see you later. Can you be the one to do it if it comes to that? Sort of like, can you be the one to delete all my passwords once I die? But yeah, we'll see what happens with that. I was just a little taken aback by her willingness to be like, well, there's no other option except death in this situation. But I do hope that she learns to live with the evil queen inside of her, because a lot of the taunting that's going on, Rumple had a line in this episode where he said, like, oh, I know if you go against me, like, you're no better than your other half. And I feel like a lot of people are going to play that card going forward, being like, don't act on this impulse because, you know, it makes you, what, do you want to be like the other half you work so hard to separate yourself from? And it's just, that, like, bugs me a little bit. Like, it feels like she has no agency in her own decision-making anymore, because every time she has to act, she has to stop and think, is this something that would make me seem like the evil queen, or is this something that makes me seem like Regina? And in that regard, she's having the same sort of identity crisis as Emma. am I just always going to be living in the shadow of the Evil Queen, or am I always going to be living in the role of the savior? Like, who am I without that other part? So I think that they, hopefully, they'll really tie those stories together going forward, because I think it would be a really interesting character study to see these two very different people on the same plane right now.
I mean, they've always been on the same, like, playing field. Like, they've always been very equal characters. And to see them kind of struggle with the same sort of thing, but in two different contexts, would be really nice for the show to do. I don't know if they're going to go there, but I kind of hope they do. You said it really beautifully.
All right. What haven't we covered? Oh, Snow White. She is back in action. She is teaching. Henry should probably be in high school by now, but, you know, they have to, like, make some sacrifices in his age.
And when did the schools get uniforms?
They, like, always had uniforms.
Did they always have uniforms? I guess I just didn't remember it. Yeah, I was like,
Henry wore the same outfit
students
for all of season one because he's in uniform.
The white polo.
Yeah, the white polo with, like, the sweater with the crest on it.
Okay, yeah. I'm going to sleep at the switch then. Never mind.
Yeah, no, they definitely had uniforms, and now he's, like, dating Violet, and Snow is like, whoa, that's
learning
weird.
Algebra.
Learning algebra, and which apparently Snow has taught before. Yeah.
Can I just tell you, funniest tweet I saw tonight was from Natalie Abrams, who went, kids in Storybrooke are so used to fighting, like, dragons and trolls and smoke monsters that education is lacked. They can't solve for X. And I was, like, dying laughing. I was like, oh my gosh, that is hilarious.
My biggest thing is always, like, where do all these kids come from? Like, I never see another child in Storybrooke until they have to go to school. It's crazy.
Yeah, especially Henry's age.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
A lot of those kids looked to be about Henry's age. There were some younger kids, too, but you don't see them at all, and then poof, it's like, we need children. There's a school.
Yeah.
And lots of babies. Tons of babies. Not very many preteens.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it's like, there's so many of them. And I'm like, well, why didn't Henry have any friends over the years? Like, this is, he was a very antisocial child. Yeah, so Snow's back, and she's having trouble communicating with her students. She has a new teacher's assistant who was not so cleverly disguised, but is Jasmine. And we found that out at the end of the episode. She went by I forget what she said. I had it written down in my... But she went by a different name, and she...
Shireen,
that's it.
I think that's it.
Yeah. And so she is teaching with Snow, and she's kind of, like, you know, scanning the classroom and, like, paying attention to weird little things. And she does help Snow figure out a way to get in touch with the children again, which is, she tells her, she's like, listen, these kids don't remember anything you taught them, but first of all, you were teaching Henry's class, and Henry now is not in your class anymore, so these are new kids. They have to learn differently. And so what she does is teaches them how to shoot a bow and arrow. Apparently, we're all gearing up to learn how to use weapons in Storybrooke, which is actually probably the best lesson that any of these kids could get, because they, like you were saying, Laura, with Natalie's Abrams tweet, they fight more than they're in school, so they should learn how to shoot a bow and arrow and also get some physics in there.
Well, I love how they're, like, quote-unquote getting back to normal, like, that's the goal here, and she, like, just is like, you know what, no, they can't just solve for X, we're gonna go out and learn to shoot a bow and arrow first. Like, I love that that's her progression, because it is kind of her normal. Like, she needed the bow and arrow first, and being a teacher in a school and learning algebra was definitely another life. So it's just kind of figuring out what normal is for them, and I think that's really kind of funny and adorable.
Well, I also just have this vision now of, like, middle school teachers everywhere now going out to go buy Nerf guns to go teach that lesson in class. Like, there are going to be classrooms across America with Nerf arrows flying across them this week.
That would be interesting. But she does get her message across, and she does inspire the class. At the end of the episode, we see Jasmine go into the forest and find the Oracle. They're both on the lookout, because apparently when realms intersect, we lose people for a while. This tends to happen every time we have a portal open or something. they're trying to find Aladdin, and apparently Aladdin and Jasmine are at war right now, and that's going to be interesting. I didn't see that coming, to be completely honest. I thought that we were just going to get the typical Aladdin story, but I'm really interested to see where they're going to take this, because Jasmine was sort of hinting at the fact that the princess in her realm lost and went away to the Land of Untold Stories, and now she has some unfinished business with Aladdin, because apparently Aladdin and her were at odds, and I really want to know what got them to that point. There's a very dramatic Open Sesame coming. Looking forward to that cheesiness.
That was so dramatic.
Yes, it was.
I'm kind of hoping it doesn't work and that they've just, like, had to splice that together to make a promo, but it actually, like, doesn't work when the episode happens and he just has to say, like, open. But did you guys see the reveal of that woman being Jasmine beforehand? Like, I knew from the casting news that it was Jasmine. I wasn't sure if anyone else knew.
Sort of, to be honest, because we have such amazing diversity on Once Upon a Time, I was pretty clear that it was Jasmine, if for no other reason that we don't have this plethora of female characters of color just, you know, sort of regularly being around, other than dun dun dun, it's the one we've hinted at. So, yeah, I just kind of figured it was Jasmine.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Sometime is not really known for their diversity.
When she first came on screen, I was like, oh, Jasmine? ? Like, is that her? Yeah. And Karen was like, wait, Shireen, wasn't she like a storyteller? Like, she could have been a character in the Land of Untold Stories. So then I kind of questioned it until the end.
Yeah, I can't remember who was the woman that tells all the stories
in the Arabian Nights?
Yeah, Arabian Nights.
She's coming as well.
Okay, that's the only other thing. I was like, well, it could be Jasmine because, yeah, diversity. But also I was like, well, maybe it's her. And I thought she would, like, help Snow by telling stories and stuff like that. And I was kind of seeing a little of the parallels. But to be honest, by the end, when we found out it was Jasmine, I was pretty stoked because she seems like she's a pretty cool character.
Yeah, I think she's going to be, like, a badass, and I'm down for that. Not that the other Jasmine isn't a badass, but I'm looking forward to seeing another awesome princess, except that, you know, she's a princess, and just because she's a princess doesn't mean she can't do whatever she wants and fight the good fight.
I also really appreciated that she was able to, like, keep a secret. Like, I feel like on this show, bad guys, like, have a tendency to be really dumb and do something stupid and their secret gets found out really fast. She, like, was able to be around Snow and keep her agenda private. And I really like that. And I want to see where that goes. So props to her.
I think she's going to be a great addition. Hopefully it's not another Hyde situation where they're talking about Aladdin for all summer and then they're, you know, done in two episodes. I do want to kind of close on the, what I like to call, unnecessary insertion of family drama into the episode, because the past few weeks we've been sort of commenting on the unnecessary family drama of Regina and Zelina, because every time they're on screen together, it just feels like it's a scene that could have been cut every week. This week, however, it was so cute. It was David and Emma. They kept having these scenes together where, you know, David's not really okay with his daughter moving in with a pirate. And he's trying to be supportive, but he's also now coming over and making breakfast. And, you know, instead of just a little, you know, lukewarm cup of coffee, they have a big meal. And he, like Karen was saying, makes her so many pancakes. Was, you know, I think it's really adorable what he's doing with her.
Yeah, and then he, like, tells her, like, my secret is I put in a little nutmeg, so now you can make them for Hook. Like, he was really trying. Like, it was cute. I like David and his pancakes.
I like David and his pancakes, but this whole thing with his father, I just didn't care about.
Oh, right. Yeah, you haven't been on yet. Let's talk about that a little bit. What don't you like about it?
I don't know. I think I was actually thinking about this and, like, the overall arc, like what we're seeing so far right now, is that I'm enjoying the fact that each episode we get somebody's story, which normally I like the bigger, longer arcs because you can spend more time with those characters. But right now it's working out really well that, you know, we get the Count of Monte Cristo and then we get Cinderella's story and they're solved. But also throughout all of that, you get the thread of the Evil Queen and Hyde and Rumple and how they're pulling the strings. So I'm actually really enjoying the format right now, but it's when they insert these more random threads that I feel like, okay, you have an A plot, you have a B plot, we don't need the C plot too. And I think it's just getting to a point where, like, sometimes that's too much for me and I just stop caring.
Yeah, because they're definitely laying the groundwork for that to be something that we also need to keep stored in the back of our mind. Like, now he's hiding this thing from Snow, and when is that going to creep up? And so you're always, like, looking for that, but on top of trying to pay attention to, like you said, to the Evil Queen and to whatever the story of the week is, and then also this whole thing with Emma, there's a lot of loose ends that maybe don't need to be there. They could be solved in a story of the week type of situation. Because right now we don't know. We have no idea what the Evil Queen's plan is. And, you know, she's playing David for some reason as a pawn and we don't know why yet. So that's another thing that's just looming over this season that we're not exploring just yet.
One quick little thing that Karen brought up while we were watching, and I really, like, as events unfolded, I really appreciated, was this, like, blossoming friendship between Hook and Belle. They haven't really had a whole lot of interaction before this season, but now, all of a sudden, like, he's almost like a big brother, and I really like that for him. He needs to have friends outside of Emma and Emma's family. Like, Belle is not... Yeah, Belle is, like, in the inner circle, but she's not directly related to the Charmings. So it's nice for, A, her to have another relationship besides just Rumple, and for Hook to have someone else to talk to besides Emma and David and Henry. So I really like it, and I really hope that we get more of it.
Yeah, and he could have left the Jolly Roger, like, and he was like, no, yeah, I'll hang out. And so he did, yeah. And he just, like, didn't want her to feel alone and trapped, and she was able to tell him when to go, like, you know, please go and, you know, stop things. And they just have a really good relationship. They have a very, like, you know, rocky past, but they both come from a bad relationship with Rumple, and they can bond over that and sow the seeds even deeper in Belle that she should hate Rumpelstiltskin. That's my favorite part of this relationship, besides, you know, giving Belle someone to talk to. All right, next week, Aladdin, all the time. Hopefully we'll get some information about the savior mythology and what Aladdin's experience as a savior was, what his beginnings with Jasmine were like, where they went wrong. We have Jafar coming in. We have some really, really bad CGI coming. Pumped for that. Love when we go to deserted areas and got flying carpets and there's so much going on that could go so terribly wrong. So, yeah, we'll be back.
Jafar. I'm so ready for Jafar.
Really did like the Jafar in Once Upon a Time in Wonderland. Although,
well, Naveen Andrews, yeah, I mean, you know.
Although, I'll give Karen her mummy guy. So, we'll see.
Is that who it is? I was like, I knew, but I couldn't remember who it was.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, Dead Fair. Oh, he's so good looking.
Tell us how you really feel, Karen.
Sorry. I've been harboring a long crush on this guy, so.
So we can have a Robert Carlyle with short hair versus Oded Fair as Jafar face-off next week on Onceable.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah.
And Chris and I will just be like, look at Hook.
Hyde! Why is Hyde dead?
At least we have Hyde.
Oh, Hyde. Can we, okay, before we wrap up, one final thought on Hyde. How good did he look walking through that fog with his top hat on? I was so into it. I was like, this is the Victorian nightmare drama of my dreams. And I want it.
I mean, yeah. I love Sam Witwer. I just do. And I'm disappointed that this is over so fast, and yeah, it was pretty brilliant though. The way they costumed him was really, really well done.
And he was just so good at carrying himself, and the speaking voice that he used for Hyde, like the earlier one when he first came out, and then the later one when he was, like, you know, in Storybrooke and a big villain in, you know, The Land of Untold Stories, was, everything was just so good.
I think he went a long way to convincing me that this was another world. Everyone else that we meet, they feel so Storybrooke, like, but Hyde just felt like he was from another universe, another world. He didn't feel, you know, he kind of gave you that Dr. Whale Frankenstein feel rather than Jasmine, who just kind of feels like another princess, another, you know, like, we'll get to know more about her, but that's just, you don't automatically remember, oh, she's from The Land of Untold Stories. So I'm going to miss that, the affected voice and all of that. It just,
yeah,
so good.
It was really good, and I definitely agree. And that brings up another, like, thing that we brought up earlier on the podcast, which is, like, that we were talking about the violence issue. Like, that whole thing now is kind of wiped out, where they come from this land that had science and, like, you know, guns and laser. Like, you know, they just had more mechanics, and I feel like that's also a thing that's going to be lost as we move away from the Hyde and Jekyll story. Although, what happened to Frankenstein? He was supposed to be working with Hyde, and then did he, like, take Snow's suggestion and just start go teaching, like, chemistry at the school?
Right.
Maybe.
He just, like, bailed. He was like, yeah, here's my assistant, and now all of a sudden he's working with dwarves. I'm like, all right, I don't know what's going on. I can't keep track of everyone.
Sigh. Yeah, one little thing on the violence, like, Jekyll's death, it again, was violent and, like, sudden, and it, you know, it didn't necessarily have the same effect as the Cinderella episode with the gun, and it wasn't quite as jarring, but it's still, like, it's a little more than we've seen on Once Upon a Time, so it kind of affected me a little bit. We'll see if it declines now.
Yeah, and David pulled a gun on Hyde.
It's just so many, tried to stab him with it.
Yeah, I feel like there's just so many.
Exactly. Oh my god. He runs at the guy with a gun. That's
he
not
doesn't know what
guns
to do with
work,
it.
David.
He doesn't know what to do with it. There's such
I
a disconnect.
I might need to take him to the range and teach him how to use the handgun.
Oh, that was so great. Yeah, it really just does show, though, like, I'm sure he has handled a gun and used it actively before, but, like, it just, like, goes to show his first instinct is not to use a gun. Like, it's, like, mm-hmm. to charge and attack and take action. I don't know if that was intentional or not, but it was just really well done for the way that we're crafting this violence narrative in our podcast.
Really funny. Yeah, I don't know if it's intentional, but it is as far as we're concerned.
But, David, you keep making those acting choices because you're really helping our cause. All right, so we'll be back next week to talk about episode 5, Diamond in the Rough. Until then, I'm Brittany.
I'm Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Laura. Bye.
Bye.